Welcome to Onc Live on Air. I'm your host today, Megan Hollish. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Ashkan Ahmadi. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Ahmadi discussed how the combination of venetoclax plus Penk-C induced complete remissions in heavily pretreated patients with relapsed refractory acute myeloid leukemia, including in those with prior exposure to venetoclax. He detailed data on the combination from a phase 1 study published in Blood, the significance of the findings, and more.
Could you expand on how the dual mechanism of the combination synergistically impacts AML, particularly in the context of relapsed or refractory disease?
The combination we have shown in the previous preclinical study that stemmed from the discovery in my lab, that combination of the BCL2 inhibitor venetoclax and glutamine depletion or depletor or amino acid modulator chrysantaspase, which is an asparaginase that is derived from Erwinia chrysanthemi, they can be synergistic. How? Because one of the mechanisms that cells use after the BCL2 inhibition is upregulating another anti-apoptotic protein. The name is MCL1. And MCL1 is a labile protein, and the combination of this chrysantaspase and BCL2, we have shown in the preclinical model as well as in this study, to decrease the level of MCL1 indirectly, and by doing so, overcome the resistance to venetoclax. And how this combination decreased the level of MCL1? Because they interfere with the mRNA translation. If you remember, there is a dogma of genetics, is the DNA, mRNA, and then protein. mRNA gets transcribed from the DNA and then gets translated into the protein. And mRNA goes through the ribosome, and there is this ribosomal machinery or the initiation complex that gather around the mRNA, and mRNA gets translated to the protein. So this combination, the novelty of that is inhibiting that cap binding of the mRNA to the ribosome, hence halt the protein synthesis in the AML cells compared to normal cells.
And how did these findings build on prior preclinical models? And are there specific biomarkers that predict enhanced response to this combination therapy?
We published this, the preclinical model of this in Journal Leukemia 2 years ago, and we used multiple available AML cell lines, as well as primary AML cells from the patient that I treated with leukemia, as well as based on those, we had developed a animal model, we call them in vivo model of the leukemia cells, that they are very resistant to the conventional chemotherapy, as well as the DNA methyltransferase inhibitor, aka hypomethylators, and the BCL2 inhibitor. So on multiple models, both the in vitro and in vivo, we showed that this combination can be effective in killing the leukemia cells in vitro and significantly decrease the growth of leukemia in the animal model. These are the human leukemia in the animal model, and resulting in the increased survival of those animals. So the data that we published, in my opinion, is as best as it can get in the preclinical model, right? But my job is not to cure leukemia in mice, is to help patients, right? So the best step is that me as a translational oncologist, you know, use the same model and design this novel investigator-initiated phase 1 study, working to treat the most resistant leukemia in heavily pretreated hosts of the patient that they have received multiple prior regimens for their AML. So in a sense, I think this is what academia is about and should be, and that is a true translationability of the data that it originates from well-designed, well-conducted preclinical model with identifying the mechanism of action, and then bring those to the clinical arena in this milieu of investigator-initiated clinical trial. And this is, in my opinion, how we advance science.
How does the combination safety profile influence the feasibility of this combination for clinical practice?
In this study, the study had two sections. The first one was a dose escalation study, which is a typical of the phase one. And the goal of the dose escalation phase is to identify the maximum tolerated dose that the patient can receive, as well as identifying the dose-limiting toxicity, or in this case, regimen-limiting toxicity, because we have two agents, venetoclax and pegcetacoplan. So that's a regimen. So our regimen-limiting toxicity was hyperbilirubinemia, which is the elevation in the bilirubin. About 60% of people, they had the bilirubin elevation, but in two patients, bilirubin was 3 or higher that did not resolve back to kind of normal level. And that was our regimen-limiting toxicity. We identify a few of the other adverse events that they were mainly the laboratory and expected, and they were not clinically significant, such as decrease in the level of the antithrombin 3, as well as decrease in the fibrinogen level, which is exactly aligns with the mechanism of action of the crisantaspase. We also saw about 35%, you know, some mild elevation in the liver enzymes. That's the essentially the adverse events that we observe mainly in this study. And for the future aspects or the future study that we are designing, learning from, again, this phase one study, we are planning to do a phase two study and launch it at West Virginia University Cancer Institute. And we are going to be the coordinating site or the main site. And then there are going to be a few other sites that they are going to, you know, have this study because of the novelty of the results. It generated a lot of interest in the leukemia community. The dose of the crisantaspase and the route of administration will be modified to try to mitigate or prevent as much as we can to decrease this bilirubin elevation and, you know, the elevation in the liver enzymes. However, most importantly, development of the venous and arterial thrombosis or blood clot, as well as pancreatitis, are a known adverse events of these asparaginase products. In our study, we did not see any thromboembolic events or any pancreatitis. So in that sense, it was well tolerated. And then there are, in the protocol that I wrote, there are ways that try to mitigate or treat or prevent elevation of the bilirubin to replete the antithrombin 3 level, as well as, you know, putting patients on some anticoagulation if their platelet allows to decrease the frequency and severity of these adverse events. So in summary, this one, in terms of the tolerability, was a completely acceptable, tolerable regimen. And for the phase two, which is not going to be the dose escalation, we are using the combination with the fixed dose. I am very confident that toxicity will not be a major issue.
And so how does prior exposure to venetoclax impact response rates? And are there molecular features such as RUNX1 mutations that explain differential responses?
This is very, very good question, because that's one of the strongest point of this study. So people that came to this study, we allowed the prior venetoclax exposure. These are the patients that they already had venetoclax in combination with the DNA methyltransferase inhibitor with the other agents, and they were refractory to the prior therapy. And we allow them on the study because these days, you know, if you want to be very selective and not enrolling patients with venetoclax, the prior exposure to venetoclax, this is not going to be a real world practice or experience. Interestingly, 33%, one out of three people that they had prior exposure to venetoclax and they were treated with this regimen, Ven-Pex-C, they achieved a complete remission with a partial or incomplete count recovery. So in a sense, this shows that a prior venetoclax or people, they had a prior venetoclax, this combination with the mechanism that I explained by interfering with the mRNA cap binding to the ribosome, resulting in the decrease of the MCL1, can overcome venetoclax or in a sense become the resensitivity to the venetoclax. So that's number one. One thing that we were going to looking at the response rate and try to correlate it with the different mutational background, we were astonished that 4 out of 4 of patients that they had RUNX1 mutation, they achieved complete remission, which is essentially 100%. And then it's in the paper, in the discussion of the paper, we investigate this more, and it has been reported that the leukemia cells and some of the hematologic malignancy cells of non-leukemia nature, when the RUNX1 in them are mutated, that makes the cells completely dependent on the ribosomal biogenesis or the mRNA translation through the ribosome. So in other words, this combination, by targeting the mRNA capping at the ribosome, it hits actually the Achilles tendon of these cells with the RUNX1. So for the phase 2 study, although we plan to include both patients with RUNX1 and mutated and RUNX1 wild type, but we will have a separate analysis on patients that they have RUNX1 mutation, and we will try to, depends on the sample size, to stratify patients' enrollment as well as their statistical analysis based on the absence or presence of the RUNX1 mutation.
The study reported a correlation between treatment response and alterations in proteins involved in mRNA translation. Could you discuss the significance of these findings and how they might inform patient selection or the development of predictive biomarkers?
So I discussed already the molecular mechanism of this in terms of the interference with the mRNA cap binding, but I would like to use this opportunity to discuss other novel correlative scientific study of this protocol. We observed that 88% of patients that they received this combination after 1 or 2 cycles of PEX-C, they had the plasma asparaginase activity or nadir plasma asparaginase activity more than 0.1 micromolar, or international unit per micromole. That's a known, both the regulatory as well as clinical accepted mark, that patients that they achieve the asparaginase activity, nadir asparaginase activity more than 0.1, they respond to the treatment with these products, albeit most of those data are from the acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And this study is the first one showing this in the acute myeloid leukemia. The second novel correlative finding is that we checked the plasma amino acids. The 3 ones that they are germane to the mechanism of PEX-C are glutamine, glutamate, and asparagine. Asparagine, after the first dose of PEX-C in all patients, decreased to undetectable level and remained undetectable for the entire time that the patient was on the study. Glutamine level significantly decreased compared to the baseline. Again, we do have in the paper, we show for all of the patients how glutamine coming down, particularly the week after administration of intravenous pegcetacoplan. And then, of course, the week after that bounces back a little bit higher, but we give the second dose, it come down. And we showed that the overall glutamine decreased significantly. I can tell you, for example, the baseline glutamine level in this study was about 400. Baseline plasma asparagine was 32 micromolar per liter, which was significantly decreased in all patients. For the patients that they had the nadir serum or plasma asparaginase activity more than 0.1 international unit per ml, the baseline glutamine before this study was 435 micromole per liter. Plasma glutamate was 53. So one mechanism of action of this drug is that it deaminates the glutamine and converts glutamine to glutamate and ammonia. So if your drug is effective, you expect that the glutamine level go down and simultaneously the glutamate level go down. So we saw a consistent decrease in the plasma glutamine after administration of Dupixent. Mean reduction was 170 micromolar with a corresponding rise in the plasma glutamate, which the mean increase was 210 micromolar. So this data, in addition to the mRNA cap binding that I told you, nadir plasma asparaginase activity, decrease in plasma glutamine level, decrease in plasma asparagine level, and then increase in plasma glutamate level, all of them can be used as a novel biomarker that potentially can predict the response to this combination.
What would you like your colleagues to take away from this conversation today?
I would like to, you know, note that the mechanism of action of this drug, which was based on a very strong preclinical finding, is extremely novel. There is absolutely no other combination out there that target the leukemia cells from this aspects of modulating the plasma amino acid level, resulting into negative interference with the mRNA cap binding. This is not a regular or the usual cytotoxic approach. This is not a regular or usual anti-metabolite combination approach. This is a very novel mechanism that can overcome the resistance to prior exposure to the venetoclax. And we hope that in phase two study, enrolling a higher number of patients, we learn more about this combination, particularly in terms of the genetic background, both cytogenetic and mutational landscape of the AML, and the rate of the complete remission, as well as the durability of the complete remission. And for the people that they are potentially can be the candidate for allogeneic stem cell transplant, how many percent of them could proceed to transplant as a potential curative option? And if the people that they are older or they have comorbidity that they are not a candidate for transplant, how this regimen can provide them a prolonged life with a good quality of life, and while patients take this regimen, which is completely outpatient. The patients, they do not need to be admitted to the inpatient and being hospitalized, and this is a 100% outpatient regimen.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On X, follow us at Enclave. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.